Welcome to A Public Affair here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Today, we'll spin the program with a special guest, Ian Brennan. He's a Grammy Award-winning music producer who specializes in live field recordings. He's also the author of 7 books and a conflict resolution specialist. Ian Brennan joins me now from Italy. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for coming on the program today. And today we are going to focus on your most recent field recording project, The Oldest Voice in the World, Azerbaijan. Thank you for bringing me back to the sky. But first, I want to loop back to what was just covered in the introduction. How does one go from conflict resolution to book writing to field recording music far off the beaten path?
Well, I don't know exactly, but ultimately, I think that these different areas are related, because I've always felt that music at its best is therapeutic and is social work. The benefit of great artists to humanity is emotionally, it's pretty hard to measure, but we know that it's massive. And so, I had to support myself from a young age, and I started working in psychiatric facilities and while making music and playing in bands and making records. And that ultimately led to field recording and traveling around the world, losing money doing it. But it's a joy to hear voices from such diverse communities and stories.
For those who may be unfamiliar with your field recordings, can you give a brief overview of your work in recent years and where all it has taken you?
Well, my wife and I, Marilena Uma Hozadeli, who does all the photos and video for the work, started embarking on these, not by design, somewhat accidentally or organically, in 2009 when we went to Rwanda with her mother, who was reuniting with a friend who she thought had been lost in the 1994 genocide, but in fact was alive. And we went in search of music while we were there to accompany a documentary that Marilena was making about her mother's return. And we were lucky enough to meet the Good Ones from Rwanda, who were an incredible, incredible group of songwriters and singers. And that was such a thrilling experience to meet such gifted artists that when we went to Malawi, where Marilena also has roots, a year later, we went in search of music and we found the Malawi Mouse Boys, who are transcendent in their ability to harmonize and sing. And from then on, it just kind of snowballed. And so we've been lucky enough to now have made over 40 records from around the world in Asia, the Middle East, and Africa and South America. And one of those won a Grammy. That was with Tenerwan from Mali. And also another one was nominated, which was the Zomba Prison Project from Malawi, which was the first and only Grammy nomination ever for the country of Malawi.
So for your most recent project, Thank You for Bringing Me Back to the Sky, it has a very specific demographic and geographic focus. All of the voices featured on the album are of people over the age of 100, and they're all members of the Talysh ethnic group, whose homelands span what is now northwestern Iran and parts of southern Azerbaijan. What made you decide to go to this region in search of its eldest inhabitants?
Well, I'm very motivated by anti-ageism, because popular music, there are many great things about popular music and there are negatives as well, like most things. And certainly kind of the fetishization of youth is a big part of pop culture and continues to be. Yet we have an aging population. And for me, a lot of my favorite voices are great singers as they age. I often like them better. So Merle Haggard, towards the end of his life, was probably not as smooth of a singer, but I thought he became a greater singer, even greater depth. And he's someone I was fortunate enough to work with. And voices like, Chet Baker and Little Jimmy Scott, were certainly prettier when they were younger, but it's fascinating to hear voices age. And so the idea that, you don't hear, when we talk about age voices, we're often talking about people that might be in their 50s, 60s, 70s, maybe their 80s. And to know of this region where, supposedly the oldest man ever lived to be 168, and there's a higher concentration of people that are over the age of 100. And also they're a minority. They're a minority group that's been, like so many minority groups, given unfair treatment historically. Their territory divided by more powerful countries. And so it seemed that there must be stories there, and there must be interesting voices there. And I think that the voices are beautiful. They're not commercial voices, but they're truthful.
So let's hear one of those voices. The first track on the album is a short a cappella song. Who is the person singing and what is she communicating in the lyrics?
This song is very poetic, and but also there's a great brevity to the song, and like I think a lot of great poetry. I mean, almost let's say more a haiku, but essentially it's a celebration of life and saying my life is good. It is like a flower.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to A Public Affair on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young, and my guest is acclaimed field recording artist and music producer Ian Brennan. We're discussing his latest project, which features the voices of centenarians, people over the age of 100 from the Talysh region of Azerbaijan. The homelands of the Talishi ethnic group also span into northwestern Iran. Ian, can you walk us through the process of finding the people whose voices were featured on the album? Did you generally have an idea of where you were going beforehand, or did you just show up and knock on doors?
Well, with all the field recording projects, it would be nice to be able to have things planned in advance. And even the attempts to do that are comforting in a way. But what we found is that it's through the process itself, the being there and meeting people and talking to people, that lead you to more poignant things. And often that's one singer leading to another singer leading to another singer. In this case, the region where so many centenarians have been known to be historically is fairly small, but not necessarily easy to get around, because it's mountainous, it's dirt roads. This was in late November, so it's snowy and icy and muddy, the mud being the most dangerous and difficult thing to deal with. So something that might look quite close together on a map might take a long time to get to, or be nearly impossible to get to. But over the process of being there, we didn't know a soul when we went. It gained a certain momentum where people in the community, certain people in the community, became very excited by the idea, sort of initially fascinated by it, like who are these people and why would they want this? And then seeing it happen, there was a genuine passion for it. And so that led to a lot of people. Sadly, this was, just after the worst period of COVID. And so there were many, many stories of so many other voices that would have been probably interested and available that had passed away just shortly before.
Tell me more about this. How did the pandemic affect this project, especially considering you were approaching the most vulnerable age group?
Yeah, well, certainly we were doing everything in our power to be as careful as possible. Brief visits and, you know, masks and obviously testing before we went and when we arrived and when we left and that sort of thing. You know, the stories of the people that had passed away were quite sad, obviously. But there was also a real interest in connection too, because people that were isolated had become even more isolated during that period, which at that point had been, you know, a year and a half for these individuals as well as many people in the world. So what was interesting was that the individual that was the known to be the oldest person on record, when she was named a few years before, there was quite a lot of press about that. But it turned out that she had passed away too, and there was zero press about that. So that was a grim discovery that we made, you know, that the attention was not there for her passing, as it was for when she was officially named the oldest person in the country.
Let's hear another track from the oldest voice in the world, Azerbaijan. Thank you for bringing me back to the sky. This one is called Shepherd Song.
Ömür bir kervandır, aylanmak olmaz. Keden gedeceği yerinde kalmaz. Atalar deyipler tökülen dolmaz. Atalar deyipler tökülen dolmaz. Bir de öz yerinde kalacağım. Ay aman aman. Ay canım aman. Aman ay canım. Ezelden beledir çünkü kainat. Cahanda müdür ömür emanet. Elden ele geçirir vefasız hayat. Vurgun geldi gitti sen yaşa dünya. Aman aman.
What's the backstory here? What's the story behind the title of this album, Thank You for Bringing Me Back to the Sky?
Well, its roots are with this individual, with this singer. And we met him in a very, very remote area, even more remote. He's a very strong individual, able to get up and walk and without assistance, and a very strong voice, probably the strongest voice. He did a number of songs and, you know, was a true singer because he'd been a shepherd. So he was explaining to us that he would sing to his sheep. And obviously had to do that in a fairly operatic way when he was young, because his voice had to carry across distances. You know, it wasn't just for the people that were within, you know, a few feet of him or whatever it may be. And so he sang a song, and he was talking about his mother, and he sang a song and he got up and left the room suddenly. So we were very concerned, like, oh wow, you know, like this is not what we want. We didn't want to cause upset. And it's what we would fear most. And so we were basically resigned to, well, I guess this is over and, you know, we'll break down this equipment and leave. And then he came back into the room and he, you know, grabbed my hand and kissed it and, you know, was smiling. And he said, it had to be translated for me, but he said, thank you for bringing me back to the sky. And so it was one of those moments in life that was inexplicably spiritual and moving, you know, to have that experience with this individual who I had so much respect for, and to experience that in contrast with this fear that we'd caused him injury in some way, to see instead that it had moved him in a positive way was very rewarding. And at moments like that, our belief is always that This is about the intimacy and the relationship and the voices and the process and not the product. So whether there's ever a record or not, it is inconsequential. It's the process itself that matters. So that was truly a moment where it's like, okay, you know, even if there never is a record, even if nobody ever hears this, this was a beautiful moment to share with another person on the planet.
I want to look back to something that you said in response to that last question. You were saying, well, he's got a powerful voice. He's a shepherd, so he sings to his sheep. And just the way that you explained it, there's a story there for perhaps urban dwellers who may not know about how shepherds communicate with the animals they are in charge of taking care of. So what do you mean by, of course, he's got a strong voice because he's a shepherd? Is that a thing? Is singing to sheep a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the roots of popular music are folk music, and the roots of folk music are work music. You know, whether that's where people laying railroad track in groups together and singing with one another to synchronize the work itself, or whether that was the isolation and to fight off that isolation of herders that would oftentimes play flutes in the belief that it was going to ward off spirits, you know, because they're alone, they're in a valley, they're in the forest, they're in the mountains. And then the singing itself, the communication, you know, with the sheep is a big part, or was a big part of the job, you know, before mechanization. You know, you're not chasing them on a tripod, you know, you're on 2 feet, they're on four. So there's got to be a way to keep them going where you want them to go, and to communicate with them. And singing, it was often, and probably still is in some cases, a big part of that.
It's making me think of a video that went viral. I don't know if it was on TikTok or in what social media platform, but during the pandemic, there was a video of a young girl making a call and response video with, I don't remember if it was her sheep or her goats, but it was, she would sing.
Oh, wow.
And there was like a bad, bad, bad response.
يا غنماتي انتوا حياتي امشوا ورايا.
My guest today is Ian Brennan, field recorder, music producer, filmmaker, and author. Ian, before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you about another one of your works, specifically your book, How Music Dies or Lives, Field Recording and the Battle for Democracy in the Arts. In it, you make the case against the dominant form of recording technology. Why is field recording a way of democratizing the arts?
Well, because of the immediacy and the transparency of it, I'm not against anything. I'm not anti anything. Anything that brings people joy, I think, has value. But I do think that the distribution networks oftentimes are selling people goods that they don't understand they have alternatives to. You know, that many people are just too busy to do the work that would be necessary to filter through the 500,000 songs a week that are uploaded to Spotify now. And that number will only increase with time. No one could keep track of that amount of music. So therefore, the promotional companies have greater leverage than ever before and greater influence. So what happens with multi-track recording is that people are generally listening to something that never happened. They're listening to a simulation of a real-time event. And great records are made that way. I mean, they sound amazing. And some of them are amazing emotionally as well. I mean, it's hard to fault, you know, Pink Floyd, Comfortably Numb, a record of that sort, you know, or Fleetwood Mac, Rumors, or, you know, records that were made in kind of that classic sense, you know, 24 track recording or 16 track, or, you know, prior to digital. And now with digital, it's infinite. But with field recording, you're listening to something that happens specifically in a time and place, in synchronicity. Whether it's one person playing with himself, or whether it's two people or three people or four people, it happened in a place, in a moment in time. It started, it ended. And there's a level of intimacy in that, and truth that I think we are oftentimes not given anymore, that we're in fact denied by so much media, where so much media is not transparent and so much media is manipulated. And I think that that ultimately has some negative effects on us morally and not so much morally, but in terms of our morale and our ability to be intimate and honest in our own lives.
So let's go back to that about morale. You mentioned oftentimes you lose money when you go to far-flung places to record individuals making music, and you referred to it as social work and now the arts as democracy. What keeps you going? Like, why do you do what you do?
Well, love of music and love of people. I mean, from the time, as far back as I can recall, music was for me what it is, what the arts are for so many people was it was a life preserver. It was a thing that kept me afloat. And that's been unwavering. And love of people and the importance of listening to the people that are not listened to as much. I really, really, really do believe in the ancient principle, democratic principle, that those who want to lead should not be allowed to, and those that do not should be encouraged to. And that's, I think, where true democracy comes from, is the reluctant are oftentimes the voices that have the most to offer. The meek are oftentimes the ones that possess the greatest wisdom, but it is not heard amidst the noise of those that are motivated by ego and are driven by reasons that are not beneficial to the whole.
As we wrap up, I wanted to also ask you to speak about the bonus tracks on The Oldest Voice in the World, Azerbaijan. Thank you for bringing me back to the sky. What's the nature of the collaboration with the artists featured on the bonus tracks?
Well, everyone that agreed to participate with the bonus tracks are people that I know and have had relationships with artistically in the past. And so we were very fortunate to get, you know, Tanarwin and Cronus Quartet and Yuka Honda and the Malawi Mouse Boys that I mentioned earlier and the Good Ones to participate. And I think that it adds an interesting layer to this as well. And certainly these are folks that, like many of us, I think, you know, aging becomes more interesting as you age. You know, you start having a little bit more interest in you know, the later parts of life. And so these are mature artists. These are people that have been around for a long time and have seen fads come and go. And again, the idea of listening to voices that are not just someone who's become a bit weathered, but is truly, truly, you know, living longer than most people do, is something that has value in terms of its uniqueness, if nothing else.
Well, let's end on one of those bonus tracks we referred to. This is The Oldest Voice with Yuka Honda. My guest today has been Ian Brennan, Grammy Award-winning music producer, field recorder, author of multiple books, and conflict resolution specialist. You can find him online at violenceprevention.us. His latest album of field recordings, The Oldest Voice in the World, Azerbaijan, Thank You for Bringing Me Back to the Sky, is due for release in April on 6 Degrees Records. Ian Brennan, thank you for coming onto the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Shannon.
You are listening to A Public Affair on KGNU. I've been your host, Shannon Young.